Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about accounting and Haskell all at once, H. Ledger. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make TWiT even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 375, recorded February 16th, 2016. H. Ledger. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Drobo, a family of safe and expandable yet simple-to-use storage arrays. Drobos are designed to protect your important data forever. Visit drobo.com/twit and use the code TWIT100 to save $100 off a Drobo Mini, Drobo 4-Bay, or Drobo 5N. And by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to go check out right after the show. I bet this is going to be one of those. With joining me today is Simon Phipps. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Randall. It's great to be back here with you again. It seems to be getting more frequent, which is a good thing.
Always good, always good. And I'm currently in beautiful downtown Santa Monica for the first time in a couple of months. And it's bright, sunny right behind me there. If you're watching the video, I'm trying to block the sun from coming towards the camera here. No clouds in the sky either, so I guess we're not going to see that. And where are you speaking to us from, Simon?
I'm here in my home office, my underground lair in my home in the south of England.
Awesome. I bet it's not quite as sunny. It's going to actually hit 80 today here, so I'm glad I packed the light coat because it's...
It's colder than Kyiv in the Ukraine here at the moment. We've actually got people thinking of going for sunshine holidays in Ukraine in order to get away from the cold.
Wow, cool. Well, of course, it's not this week in locations. It's this week in... No, it's not. I did that before. This is Floss Weekly, so we're talking about free Libre open source software. This week is no exception. We're going to bring on Simon Michael in just a couple of minutes to talk about H. Ledger, the H being the important part of this, I guess. We had Ledger back on the show. It's a double entry accounting system and much more. We had them back on in January of 2011. Boy, that's really spanning some distance in terms of Floss Weekly time. It was episode 150 way back there. But we had a great chat with the creator of Ledger, and this time we're going to be chatting with the creator of H Ledger, which is Ledger written in Haskell. And the number one question I'm going to have for him when I bring him on is why Haskell? But okay, maybe that's not a little bit too pointed, but we'll see how that works out. So what do you know about this, though, Simon?
I know nothing about H Ledger. I'm actually in the market for a ledger for running a nonprofit organization at the moment. I'm aware that Ledger is used widely in the free software community for nonprofit accounting. I'm also aware that it is a fantasy software product for people who like command line interfaces as their view of the world. So I'm interested by the fact that H Ledger appears to have a web interface, which makes it come into the running for me. So I'm going to be listening excitedly to this program to see whether this is the software I want to tell my accountant we're using for our new nonprofit.
Yeah, cool. And of course, this is all totally open source and in Haskell, which the people like Haskell will be enjoying. And I mean, I think there's like extension languages for it too, plugins and things like that. So if you like Haskell and you like accounting, this may be your show. all six of you out there. All right. No, probably a few more. Or else this wouldn't be existing.
Oh, no, yes,
Totally unfair. Totally unfair. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I should stop that. I should definitely stop that. But before we bring the other Simon on, this is going to be confusing. Simon and Simon. Oh, boy. Okay. I do have a very important message I want to bring to you, because digital data is an essential part of our lives. For all your storage needs, Drobo is the simple, safe, and expandable solution. They offer a complete line of external storage arrays, which you can order preloaded with drives or add your own. Drobo's 5N is perfect for network-attached storage as a media server, file server, or backup solution. It's easy to use. Just plug it into your switch or router, and you're ready to go. Apps let you backup data to two different cloud service providers or sync via BitTorrent Sync. It includes a quad-core ARM processor. Three of these cores are available to run Linux. Yes, that runs Linux inside. That's so cool. Tools for developers include a full LAMP stack, Node.js, and WordPress. It also supports C, C++, Go, Perl, yay Perl, Python, and Ruby, as well as Git to host your own repo. Wow, that's kind of cool. Drobos are reliable. Data received by your Drobo and not yet written to disk is protected if a sudden power loss. Even better, Drobos have an internal eUSB device where data is copied if there's a power failure to protect against long outages. It's expandable. Expand or replace storage in your Drobo with ease. No tools required. And the Beyond Ray technology lets you expand on the fly and mix and match drives. I remember expanding my machine from like 2 terabyte drives to 4 terabyte drives. It was trivial. It was very easy to do. It's simple. Easy to read colored lights on the front of the Drobo communicate status. It was fast. Supports Thunderbolt, Gigabit, and USB 3.0 connections. The connection varies per model. It also has an SSD hot cache to accelerate database and small file reads. It's also great for reading HD and large media files. So yes, I've had a Drobo 4 bay for probably, I must say, about 8 years now, almost since they came out, and it has all my home data. I've got 4 or 4 terabyte drives in there, and it automatically gets backed up to the cloud and everything. It's really slick. So visit drobo.com/twit to learn more and check out their complete line of products. And when you use the code TWIT100, you'll save $100 off the purchase of a Drobo Mini, Drobo 4-Bay, or Drobo 5N. That's drobo.com/twit, and use the code TWIT100. We thank Drobo for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's get back to the show. Let's go ahead and bring the other Simon on. Simon and Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking from Del Rey in Los Angeles, which is... Not too far from Marina Del Rey.
Yeah, about that way. Okay, right out that window, right towards the sun. So can you see me wave? No. Okay, all right. Never mind. So why don't you give us the 30,000-foot view? What is H-Ledger, and why is it different from Ledger, and what got you started?
So H-Ledger is what I call a ledger-like. So it's one of a number of programs inspired by Ledger, which are accounting tools with a certain philosophy and a certain approach. And the fact that we've just started to put together a site to describe this, but it's basically, like a lot of people, I discovered Ledger, which you had on the show, John Weigley's Ledger tool, and was really taken by it after wrestling with different GUI programs, having them crash, having them kind of, you know, feeling insecure about my data and wanting to customize them and finding that difficult. Ledger was kind of a revelation. And then in due course, I wanted to go a little different direction, and at the same time was feeling very, very positive about the future of Haskell, the programming language. And so H-Ledger began with my experiments to see if, you know, how that would work in Haskell, and has grown from there.
And were you already an experienced Haskell programmer?
No, this was kind of my first real Haskell project. I'd use it for some little tests and things like that before then.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. So the Ledger-like applications, when would I reach for them? What is this going to do for me?
That's a good question. I think it appeals most to, at the moment, to techies and folks who are power users and do-it-yourselfers, people who are comfortable with the command line and who like the freedom to customize your workflow and to integrate it with other tools and to be able to, you know, use your favorite editor to manage your data. So in my case, I had been using Quicken for a number of years, and for a few years after that, GnuCache, which is a great project. But I had been having a lot of trouble with, you know, they would hang or they would have infelicities in the user interface that just made them frustrating to use. And I wanted to be more efficient. And so I think there's a great simplicity to the Ledger model, a kind of a functional kind of a approach where it takes the data, it prints a report, and that's all it does. It doesn't change your data. So there's a kind of a separation of concerns, which was very reassuring. I think longevity of accounting data is important, and you want to be sure that it's an open format that you can always read, you can always have access to even 10, 20 years from now. So I think those are some things that make it appealing. Might be a little early to say, but there's a site, plaintextaccounting.org, just coming together, which kind of introduces some of this stuff too.
It's interesting too, because I was just thinking of that, given that Haskell is primarily functional language, so your data doesn't get mutated in place, it gets copied and transformed, that actually mimics what Ledger itself is doing, where it's only looking at your text file and not actually modifying it.
Right. Yeah, it's quite analogous. And of course, you can architect this in any language. And John did it in C++, and it's been done in a bunch of other languages. But yes, there are a lot of parallels there.
Now, if the biggest thing I have to manage is my checkbook, does that still make sense to use this with my checkbook, or do I need to be like a small business to say want to use something this complex?
Not at all. So, for me, this is simpler than GUI tools in a lot of ways. That may not be true for everybody, but I do think that the Ledger and H-Ledger and Ledger-like style, it scales more smoothly from very simple up to more complex, because you're not forced to learn a lot of different screens and functions. It starts with just a text file, and you enter your transactions, just write them one after the other in a sequence. And that's your part. And then, you know, H-Ledger's job is to produce a report. And so I use it for reconciling my checkbook register. So I'll record, you know, transactions that I do for my bank account in this text file called a journal. Or I may even download some of that from the bank, and then I'll get a register report, and I'll compare that with the bank's register online and just make sure they line up.
Cool. And so there's a pretty low barrier to entry then. I could just use it just to have like one column of numbers and record the increases and decreases in it?
There's a little format, a simple text format, I believe invented by John, which is more or less common to all of the Ledger likes. And I think if you're familiar with a text editor, anybody who's comfortable with using one of those, it's very straightforward. So it basically is a date and an optional description. And then you have usually two lines below that. Each one names an account and an amount of money or some other commodity. It doesn't have to be money, but usually it's money. And you're basically saying X amount of money moved from this account to this account. So for a purchase, it would be from checking to some expense category. And we're using double entry accounting here, if this wasn't obvious. So that was one of the appeals too, is that some accounting tools sort of hide that underlying accounting model. But I like, and I think Ledger-like users like, that the double entry model is exposed, although we do simplify it in some ways, which I can talk more about.
So now, listening to what you're talking about here, it seems to me that the sort of tasks that many people would use a proprietary accounting tool for are not included in Ledger. Things like importing your transactions from your banks in a CSV file, or making new entries into your transaction history that's all something that you've got to handle using other tools like a stream editor or like a text editor. And Ledger is simply a reporting tool. Is that a correct view?
That's a correct view, at least to begin with. Initially, that is very much true. So the original Ledger is a reporting tool. It's not responsible for data entry. You're responsible for that. And likewise, the core of HLedger is similar. So the vision, though, is that based on this foundation, it's easy to add more tools or more features to the core tool to kind of provide for some of those other needs. So it is now very common. Most of the Ledger likes have some kind of CSV conversion feature. So with HLedger, you can CSV is, it's kind of the lowest common denominator for bank data. Pretty much every bank offers that. And so it's very common to download your recent transactions by CSV, and then you'll have some rules or an add-on tool to convert that to our native format. So there is actually an add-on, Ledger-AutoSync, written by another author, which will actually automate the download process if your bank speaks OFX direct. But it's still kind of early days in some ways. We've been all kind of working on the core functionality, and there's a lot of room still to build out some of these convenience features. User interfaces are another example of this. The original Ledger and the base part of HLedger focuses very much on just command line interaction. But certainly a lot of people, and definitely one of my visions early on, was to build on top of that other kinds of user interface to make it accessible to a wider range of people.
Okay, we're going to take a pause here because engineering tell me they'd like you to reposition your mic.
Yeah, I think we're hearing your nose breathing into your mic occasionally, and it's popping. So maybe a little further away or a little higher?
Further away, or maybe angle it differently.
Well, breathe.
How's that any better?
Breathe. It's the exhales that were popping on it.
Bummer. And I'm also getting over.
Just give me a brief explanation of what the Haskell language entails.
Yeah.
Just as a mic test.
All right. So, okay. Editor, this is a part we're cutting out. Talk to me.
I need testing. 1, 2, 3. Haskell is a language that is very interesting, and I probably shouldn't talk all about it before we
come back.
But
okay, I think we're not hearing the popping that we were before. So let us continue with Simon's next question. Yes?
Okay. Yep. So let's dig a little deeper into that because Ledger is a program that I associate with Unix geeks wanting to live on the command line. And I know that HLedger has got, for example, a web interface built into it. So is the direction that you're taking to keep the file format as the standardization point between Ledger and HLedger and gradually add tools for the 21st century? Or is your direction still to serve the Unix geeks wanting to keep their checkbook in order?
The first thing that you said is a good way to say it. I definitely... I'm a Unix geek and definitely want to still serve that need. But also I have a strong desire to make it also a more practical tool for non-Unix geeks. And I think the two can coexist very nicely. Even Unix geeks enjoy a GUI sometimes. Some tasks are easy.
Some of them do, yeah.
And, you know, some tasks are better done that way. So the right tool for the right job. And... The data format is indeed a good point of kind of interchange between the Ledger likes. In the beginning, HLedger actually kept the same, the identical output on the command line too, partly as a kind of an error checking. It was useful to be able to compare both implementations, but gradually it has diverged a little bit. But we still, and pretty much all the other Ledger likes do too, share a common core of file format. Each one has their own kind of variations, but it's pretty easy to port between, move your data between one and the other.
Right. So now you, one of our listeners, R. Campbell 3, asks in the IRC, he says, I like the simplicity. I like open source. For past or existing Quicken users, how do you see Hledger's ability to win them over?
So on this new site, this plain text accounting site, I talk about that a little bit. And for me, you know, I wanted something that was free software that I could depend on being around and available 10 years from now, 20 years from now, something I didn't have to pay new fees for every year, something where I really felt like I owned my data. And I also felt like, you know, something that's free software that has a community of people using it and working on it and building out on top of it is long run always going to outperform a proprietary product. So maybe not in terms of ease of use, at least not for a while, but in terms of features and flexibility and evolvability. I think that I definitely did have a vision and still do have a vision of a very slick, easy user interface that I think in many ways I've just been kind of building foundations so we can get to that point. And the sort of web interface that we have so far is kind of a step in that direction. We also have a Cursus style interface that I can talk about. But I think for people already comfortable with Quicken, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a hard sell right now. If you need a lot of structure, you know, there is value in that. If you have a graphical user interface that really, you know, kind of walks you through, has wizards and whatnot, we don't have that quite yet. In many ways, Hledger and the Ledger likes, they're a little bit more like an accounting construction set. You need to know a little bit more about accounting, but I think we can make up for that with a lot of community-generated tooling and documentation that we're starting to see appear.
So you mentioned community there. Could you describe the community to me? I mean, I've been looking on GitHub, and you seem to be the only real developer on the main GitHub branch. So what is your community like?
Yes, and when I say community, I guess I'm talking about the larger community of Ledger likes, but the Hledger community, it's, as you say, I'm pretty much the main active developer. It's been that way since 2007, although I occasionally get a big chunk of contribution. I think we're up to about 30 committers, but it's not yet at the point where, you know, it'll just keep growing without me. I did get a pull request just this morning, which is nice. Ledger is still the biggest, most popular of the Ledger likes. Hledger is number two. Number three would be Bean Count, which is another Python-based Ledger like. And then there's a couple of smaller ones. There's one in Go and one in Scala. So we do have an IRC channel with about 20 people on it, and a mailing list. And I think each time that we push a little more into the sort of GUI and, you know, things become more practical and also more visual, we sort of attract another round of interest and users.
Right. So you're GPLv3, so you're already there to fit in with the free software world. Why did you pick GPLv3 rather than another license?
Well, I've been inspired by the free software movement since I came across it in the 90s or so, and just really found that, you know, the software that they released was better than what I was using. And their principles, the more I read about them, really made sense and seemed to be effective. And so I think at that time, there seemed to be more more kind of a little bit more conflict between proprietary and free software communities seemed like more lawsuits. There was a lot of concern about patent issues. And the GPL seemed to be the, you know, for a small-time free software developer, you know, an individual without the backing of a company, the GPL did and does seem to offer to me the most protection and the most, you know, guarantees the most kind of rights and control over your destiny. And I feel that by starting at that high ground, you always, as long as you have copyright, you have the option to selectively change or allow exceptions to that license, but it's impossible to go the other way, so that if you choose a weaker license and some large company starts to tread on your turf and you know, maybe try to, worst case, shut you down, you would have fewer options, less recourse.
Cool. So whether you're developing an app, a website, or working on a server-based project, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean offers Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed easily to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. This helps you to get your project off the ground quickly and makes it easy to scale when you find success. DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including me. Develop and configure your Droplets via a streamlined control panel or simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and even FreeBSD. And that's the reason I am a user, because they have FreeBSD. Select from one of the many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, or Node.js to get up and running quickly, or build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSDs in state-of-the-art data centers around the world. Highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. And you can also use the advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via API. You also have an extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your Droplet. Want to configure a LAMP server, set up a virtual desktop or VPN? They've got you covered. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available, starting at just less than a penny an hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. We thank DigitalOcean for their support of Floss Weekly. And so now I want to get back to Haskell again for a second. So what is it that attracted you to Haskell, or that Haskell brought to the table?
Good question. So prior to this project, you know, I bounced around with a bunch of different free software projects, but my big one before this was Zwicky, which was a wiki engine written in Python. And I led that project for 10 years and had kind of reached the point where the amount of work I was doing just to kind of keep that running and keep it bug-free as the underlying platform and libraries changed and shifted was excessive. You know, I was just kind of running in place to keep it robust, and so Haskell seemed to be a language that promised maybe a different way of doing things, where more of that. It basically sounded like maybe I could be more productive by using a language that prevented a lot of those kind of routine errors and breakages, and I guess somebody just recommended it to do, you know, write some tests in. I started using it for that, and it just was interesting, and I was learning a lot. And it just kind of gradually has kind of grown on me. And I became, over time, just very passionate and excited about it. And, you know, in some ways, I was a little bored with tech and software, and I was looking for something that really was a kind of a big jump up that would give me more bang for my buck, and Haskell so far has been delivering really well.
Now, did you study computer science in school?
Computer engineering, so engineering, yeah, with a kind of a computer focus.
Okay, because every time I personally tried to learn Haskell about six times. But every time I get up to about midway through the tutorial documentation, when it gets to the word monad, I get stuck. Do you have a simple explanation for what a monad is? Maybe you'll be my savior about this.
Oh, boy. Oh, you put me on the spot there. That is a well-known fallacy. Do not attempt a new monad tutorial, especially live on Floss Weekly.
I'm sorry. It seems like, and I might be wrong. I don't have a computer science background. I grew up in the streets for programming, so I don't have any of that fancy schmancy stuff that they always talk about in every tutorial I've ever seen on Haskell. I understand the concept of functional programming, basically, I think. But after that, I just get lost. How did you get over that hump, or was it not a hump for you?
Not so much a hump for me. I feel that. There's a lot of overemphasis, not overemphasis, but there's a preponderance of people interested in the computer science aspect and the theory and the advanced type level trickery in the Haskell community. But it's an extremely practical language. And amongst Haskellers, I would definitely be probably more on the practical end. You know, my goal was to get working software, working quickly and bug-free and, you know, using as little, with as little head scratching as possible. So monads in particular are, they're the buzzword, and they get, I think, over-focused on. If you're just trying to get things done in Haskell, you use monads in a kind of a cookie cutter way without knowing, you know, perhaps the advanced theory, at least right away. And it works reasonably well. I think there is definitely a process for a lot of us. I was the same, where I tried several times, kind of failed, had to back off, maybe give the concept some time to kind of gel. But each time I came back to Haskell, things that I had struggled with before just suddenly seemed to kind of make sense. And so I think it just takes a little time. It is very useful to have some kind of, I think, practical project or goal to work on, which I had.
I wonder if learning this language is similar to how I learned performance roller skating, where we used to say a particular move was like a 7-fall move or a 19-fall move, that until you actually fell the 19 times while trying the move, we're not going to be able to master it. So maybe Haskell is like an 8-fall monad language, and I just haven't hit my head against it enough yet.
I think, learning by doing, I think, definitely worked for me. And I think there are a lot of practical Haskell programmers, but they don't always have the same prominence and voice. I think it's something that we definitely should try to encourage and grow, because it's really a super tool.
You know, I change to a slightly different topic, and I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but it sounds like you didn't really... You weren't really able to build up a community of contributors, like primary contributors, for either Zwicky or now for HLedger. Are you actively trying to spread yourself out some more and get more core people that are really enthusiastic about the project the way you are?
I am, or at least I say I am. Since the beginning, that's always been the vision. You know, I was inspired by projects like Debian and GNOME and many others, and I can see how community is a lot more productive. I think at the same time, you know, I am a little bit of a perfectionist and a craftsman, and I have, you know, a strong vision often, and there may be ways in which I'm not making it as inviting as I need to. So I'm interested in that whole area. I think there's a little bit of because Haskell is a smaller community, it is a little bit harder to build up critical mass. There's also a lot of very exciting projects for Haskellers to contribute to. But it is my vision that I can attract more kind of regular developers, and so that I can get to use the great tools that they're building. And that that has happened, but we can go a lot further.
Cool. Speaking of Ledger and HLedger, how compatible are they?
You can keep a ledger or a journal file which is compatible with both if you kind of avoid you know, power features of Ledger. And that was kind of the original vision, was that you could, you know, apply whichever tool had the feature you wanted. And if one had a bug, you could use the other or compare the two at least, and you'd have some security that way. We do need to catch up a bit with some of the recent Ledger syntax additions. It's always possible to, shouldn't say always, but it's usually possible that you can read the file and print it in a format that the other can read. So there's a command called print, which gives you a kind of a simplified standard output. So pretty compatible. And, you know, the core commands are the same and a lot of the options and flags are the same. So it's easy for a user to move from one to the other, I believe.
And as you started creating HLedger, because you said there was some bugs that you didn't have workarounds for in Ledger and other things like that, and you also wanted to try this Haskell thing, did you start out thinking you were going to end up implementing most of Ledger completely, or was it just an experiment to see kind of what it would be like?
It was more of an experiment to begin with. It seemed like, you know, the first step was, well, would Haskell work for this? And that was kind of an open question, because there weren't many real-world sort of end-user tools written in Haskell at that point. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I started writing a little parser to see if I could read the Ledger format, and it just kind of went from there, and it went pretty well. It was a little bit slow for a while, then I think there was a new release of GHC, the Haskell compiler, and suddenly it was faster, and then I kind of learned how to optimize a little bit, and it got faster still, and just features that I needed just kind of kept getting added and working, and it was so no, it wasn't originally intention to replace, but I was frustrated with some of the things that we couldn't get done in Ledger, it seemed like, and I felt always that we should have multiple implementations, because it really it's a great design, I think, and a great kind of concept, and it deserved, you know, it's a big design space to explore. It deserved a lot of implementations. Nowadays, I you know, I'm glad that there is a Haskell implementation, because I feel that it has legs, and I think it's going to keep growing.
And so I mentioned, because I thought I saw it on the website somewhere, that there's some sort of plug-in mechanism so you can extend in Haskell pretty easily HLedger?
It's got a Git-style kind of plug-in mechanism where it's just based on if you have some executables in your path which begin with HLedger dash, it'll notice those and it'll list those as commands. It's a little difficult. It's kind of an unsolved problem how to integrate plugins at runtime with a Haskell program because of these sort of statically compiled nature. So whereas with a Python program, you could, you know, just run that script, load in a module or whatever. So for HLedger, we do it this way, and it seems to work fine. We've had that's, I guess, another way I'm getting contributors is we've had, I think, maybe three plugin tools like that released on Hackage. One of them is for generating interest transactions. Another one is for calculating internal rate of return of accounts. Another one is for comparing journal files to see what transactions are different. So that's also a lot of the kind of GUIs that have showed up are add-ons like this too. So, yeah.
Cool. And we have a question from the chat room here. Somebody named John W. He says he claims he knows the author of Ledger. And so, anyways, how well do you think the various members of the Ledger-like communities cooperate design-wise, tackling UI problems, et cetera?
That's a good question. Thank you, John. I think pretty well. I think we have a kind of a home base, which I think is the Ledger mail list. That's still where most of the folks interested in this stuff hang out or listen in. And in the beginning of H-Ledger, I was sometimes I would find a better way to do things, I thought, which I thought would be useful to H-Ledger. I mean, I would find a better way to do something for H-Ledger, and I thought, boy, the Ledger guys might find this useful too. And so I've always been tried to kind of share those kind of discoveries back. You don't always see those changes appear right away in the other tools because, you know, pretty much they all have more or less a single lead developer so far. And depending how busy that person is, you know, stuff may not happen right away. But there have been some great, some things that have appeared in Ledger that were kind of tested in H-Ledger first. And of course, I've incorporated new things from Ledger too. And I think Bean Count, which is another Ledger like, has, you know, has kind of inspired us too, and has probably picked up some of our things. So right. There's a lot of interchange. I'm still very much thinking of myself, I don't use Ledger day to day, but I hang out in the channel, IRC channel, and kind of support when people have questions. And I'm very interested in kind of growing the whole field. And that's why I proposed this other site that I keep harping on about, just to kind of bring more visibility, because we've despite the interchange, there has been a little bit of sense in which we have all these great tools, but they're not all kind of visible in one place, and they have their separate mailing lists and whatnot. So I'm happy that we're kind of getting a site to be a kind of an introduction to all of them.
Right. And just to clarify for some of our listeners, Simon, what platforms is H-Ledger available for?
Any platform that you can get Haskell installed on. So Unix, Mac, Windows. And that's been a goal from the beginning, for it to be as cross-platform as possible, and Haskell has worked pretty well for that. There's only one component right now that isn't supported on Windows, which is the Cursus style interface. But the web GUI works just fine on Windows and on Mac and on Unix. Right.
And any problems in the text files with end of line delimiters?
Not so much.
Cross-platform issues?
No, that should just work. We'll handle either type.
Right. So one of the questions that's come out of the IRC is R. Campbell 3 back again, asking, if you use plain text files, how do you handle backup and transaction logging? And I would extend that to say, and also data file integrity. Do you have any desire or interest to support keeping data and changes in a Git repo?
Good question. I forgot to mention one of the great advantages of the plain text format. I don't know if I talked about plain text at all, but that's one of the key characteristics of these systems, is that we store the data as plain text, because we want it to be very malleable, and we want to be able to track changes. So we use revision control for that very, very typically. So I track my own journal files in Git. Used to track them in Darks before that. You know, any revision control system will do. So that's a great feature, which I think a lot of accountants would value highly, even if the tool is a bit unconventional for them, to be able to have that kind of rigorous audit trail is a useful thing, both for, you know, business accounting, and also just for your own, what the heck happened here? Why is this not adding up the way it used to? We don't yet integrate with that. So you could imagine H-Ledger Web, for example, the web GUI, automatically checking into a revision control system. There's a lot of stuff like that one could do.
All right. Well, let's talk about that for a moment, because I said during the introduction, I mean, in the market for an accounting system for a new open source nonprofit that I'm starting here in the UK. And right. One of the questions that I've got to ask myself is, I don't know any hardcore Unix accountants around here. When I asked my accountant what software I should be using, they told me Sage Accounts, which is what is the proprietary supplier here in the UK. What sort of concessions are there to allowing me to work with people from the Muggle world of non-Unix? Are there any tools? Are there any capabilities that will allow people to easily access these files without having to learn the command line?
I think web is the way to go for that right now. So Hledger Web is my first web interface for Hledger, and you can see that running at demo.hledger.org right now. Interestingly, I recently learned you can also deploy it with a few clicks on sandstorm.io, which I think you had on the show previously too. That's a kind of an application hosting platform, also free software. So, in about a minute, you can for free set up a web accessible access controlled Hledger web instance where you can have people add transactions through the web, and you can see your reports there. So they need never touch a command line. They need never install software. So I think we can go a lot further in this direction. We just added, I can talk a little bit, it's a little bit more future stuff, but we have an API server now for Hledger, which hopefully is going to lend itself to more richer, to more rich Ajaxy style web apps. But I think there's also the Cursus interface. So if somebody is comfortable, you know, clicking an icon to start the Cursus UI, it'll open a window. It'll be a terminal window, but they won't have to type commands. They can browse around using the arrow keys, and they can that can be good for just reviewing stuff too.
Right. But I mean, presumably you're going to have to add the automated interface with version control to really make that an unskilled activity, because you know my accountant isn't going to be able to do a check anything out of a version control system. My accountant is almost certainly not going to be able to give a command on a command line to make something happen. So presumably this is all future capabilities that we're talking about here.
It very much could be. I mean, a lot of this is up to what people want and who steps forward with patches and whatnot. There's definitely far more than one person can do themselves. So I tend to focus on what I need and also what I have inspiration for. And that, I think right now it is possible an accountant could come to the web interface and get some data, but realistically, you're probably going to be preparing a report and shipping it to that person. You're going to be sprucing up the text report and just printing it as PDF or emailing it or exporting it to CSE and then importing it into a spreadsheet so you can give them a spreadsheet. We definitely can improve the kind of export and interchange formats. We also have a number of Ledger has a couple of and BeanCount have a couple of nice web UIs just showing up, which have some nice reports and charts. It is work in progress.
Right. I've been tipped off by some of your users on Twitter that one of the questions I should ask you about is about collaboration between these many branches of the Ledger community. You looking at the list of apps there does seem to be a lot of wheel reinvention going on in a variety of languages. Do you have any moves in hand to maybe collaborate so that you're all solving different problems rather than all solving the same problem?
Yes. I can announce today, I think, as a World Floss Weekly exclusive, that we have a new website, plaintextaccounting.org, which is at least giving listing all of these things in one place, making it known that they're available, and hopefully documenting some of the kind of common workflows and processes between them. I hope that this will help help them to become more compatible even than they are now, and maybe make more visible, you know, what's being duplicated or what lessons can be learned from one tool and kind of replicated in the other.
Right. And one of the other things about using software like this for a larger activity is I don't want another hobby. I want to make sure that I can run this software and have a service provider look after it for me. Do you have a commercial community around this so that I would be able to, for example, get a service provider maintaining the software and fixing bugs for me? Or is this entirely a homebrew activity?
We do not, but I kind of would like to have one. It was always the vision, actually, of this project that there would be an earning, a kind of a commercial aspect to it. At every step, it seemed like the wrong move to kind of close things down, and it just hasn't grown that way. But there's also been a concern for me about if you start a SaaS service providing, you know, accounting features, there's a big kind of privacy concern. Do you want to host your accounting data in the cloud, especially with a small company? But I think it would be great to have something like that, and it might be related to this Sandstorm hosting service, or it might be something new. So I'm definitely open to more discussion on that.
Hey, I forgot, by looking on your looking in the stuff you sent in before the show, you mentioned Squeak. What did you do with the Squeak project? I should remember, but maybe I don't.
There's been a lot of projects under the bridge. Squeak, I used to be active on the list and in the IRC channel. I set up the Planet Squeak sites, which are blog aggregators.
Oh, cool.
Back when that seemed to be something we needed to kind of raise our profile and community. I'm always into building community as well as coding, so that seemed to be a way I could contribute. I also used to maintain the what was it called? Project Gestures, I think. It was a software written by someone else that meant you could control your Squeak system with gestures with the mouse. Mm. And so you know, packaging and shipping. A lot of what I do seems to be, when I'm not coding, it seems to be about packaging and documenting and kind of communicating about stuff, which is always needed.
So actually, I just had a whisper in my ear here. What's your day job?
I'm a consultant. So I do, for the last, I guess, year or so, I've been pretty much focused on a PHP ERP system. So I'm kind of the developer and sole maintainer of that. And before that, I was doing front-end JavaScript stuff, a little bit of Java and JavaScript for a kind of a architectural SaaS app. But mainly it's contract PHP right now.
Okay, cool. Hey, we're almost out of time. Is there anything that we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we let you go?
I think you covered it pretty well. I just want to say thank you to you guys for doing this show, because it's been a great way to hear of some interesting projects and hear about the stories behind them. So good.
Thanks.
Job.
And you contributed to that pile just today, so that's very nice. So there we go.
Thank you very much.
I got two questions I got to ask. Otherwise, people will yell at me. What's your favorite text editor, since you mentioned editors a lot?
Emacs.
Yay! Old school.
It had to be. Let's face it.
It's been a long time. I'll use Vim. I mean, everybody should know Vim, so that you can use it when you need it. But Emacs.
Good. All right. And what's your favorite scripting language?
That'll be Haskell.
You can script in Haskell. You pound bang something.
You can script in Haskell. You got to give a shout out to Bash. You can't deny that's an efficient language sometimes for scripting, but. But Haskell, if I can. I mean, you know, I love Python, but it's Haskell now.
Really, really? Have you completely gone away from Smalltalk now?
Still love Smalltalk, but, you know, I used to see the same thing that I saw in Python, especially in the Squeak world, just those endless little breakages that you wouldn't want to be breaking, stuff that should keep working. One of the things I love about Haskell, there's a sense in which you code it and it works and it stays working. So there must be a way to achieve that in Smalltalk too, but it seems harder.
Yes. Well, you know, you've inspired me to actually dust off the old Haskell readmes again and see if the ninth time I'll get past that Monad problem.
good.
So thank you very much, Simon. Simon, well, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Great. That was Simon Michael talking to us about his Ledger program. He's still there, but Ledger program in Haskell. Other Simon, what'd you think?
I've heard a lot about Ledger. I've got a lot of friends in the free software community who rely on it. And I think this was the writing H Ledger was a necessary upgrade from Ledger. I'm still not completely convinced that it's for muggles. I would really like to use it for the startup, the nonprofit that I'm starting, but I'm worried that I would have to reprogram my accountant to be able to actually audit me, and I don't want to get into the habit of having to prepare all the accounts ready for auditing. I'd pay an accountant for that. In terms of its applicability to the broader world outside individual users, I'm not so sure. As a technology, I think it's great. I really like the idea of a plain text file for holding accounting records. And if there was one thing I'd like to see propagated out into the proprietary world, it would be that vision for using a plain text file so that I don't get locked in by all of these proprietary accounting software packages.
Yeah, I did like the irony, though, of putting a plain text file in something as complex as Darks, where you know it's never a plain text file anywhere inside the thing. It's all in some sort of magical compressed format and stuff. So I think the irony there was not to be missed. I thought it was kind of cool.
You use what you've got. You know, if he'd had CVS, it would have been in CVS.
But at least in CVS, it's occasionally in the format of a plain text file in CVS. Whereas like something like Git or Darks or something, they compress and store digital differences and things. So it's never actually the plain text file anywhere in there. That was just the irony. All right. Yeah. But this looks good. I'm inspired to go try Haskell again. I'm probably going to regret saying that because it means I'm actually going to give some of my valuable, precious time to trying it again and beating my head on this side against the Haskell wall. But we'll see. I know a lot of people really swear by it, and a few of us swear at it. So that's about all I want to say about that. Anything else before we move on?
No, that's it. We're ready to go plugging.
Okay, great, great. So our upcoming guest next week, we have OpenAV Productions, which is a music synthesis and performance platform, which should be pretty interesting. I know that Aaron expects some interest in that, so I might have him back on. And unfortunately, probably the person I'd really like to have on, Dan Lynch. I'll give a shout-out to Dan Lynch right now. That he's going through some medical issues, and that's why he hasn't been on the show in a while, and apparently went through a major surgery a few days ago, but everything is moving swimmingly. So I hope to get him back on the show. Maybe another couple months after you get some recovery time and bring him back on the show. So just think of a music thing, tip of the hat to Dan for that. Following that, we have ToroDB. I saw these guys at Scale, this guy at Scale. You know, MongoDB is all the big rage. Everybody wants MongoDB because they want web scale and they want all that sort of stuff. He said, hey, what if we put a MongoDB wire protocol in front of Postgres? And before you think that's insane, he's getting performances of 6 to 7 times MongoDB on comparable hardware. So this could be a complete drop-in replacement for MongoDB and use all the power and scaling of Postgres behind the scenes. That is really, really cool. And following that, we have CouchDB 2.0. That's a JavaScript accessible database. Jen Linhart, who was on our show, I think, about 7 or 8 years ago, is going to be on the show talking about that project. And also adjacent to that project, he's got Hoodie, which is a easy to use backend for front end developers. So those look like a couple of really interesting projects for people who are doing a lot of front end work these days. I'm still filling the last 2 slots in Q1. I'm opening up Q2 this weekend, and we'll start begging for more guests, talking to all the people that we want to talk to. If you go to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for the show, you'll see all big spreadsheet I like to call, because it actually is a Google spreadsheet, and it'll tell you how far I've gotten in trying to get other people on. If you want a project on the show, please email the project leader or community coordinator and have them email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. My email address is on the homepage. And just tell them, hey, I love Floss Weekly. You should be on it. And, that's the way almost all these shows have gotten on stage here. We have a live stream. We took a lot of questions from that today. It's at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays at live.twit.tv. Now, that changes according to daylight savings time in the U.S., which I think is going to change in about 3 weeks. So which is different from the UK. So, and everybody else in the world. I don't know why we're messed up like that. So you always track Pacific time in the U.S. You follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. That's my primary blogging platform. You get about 23,000 followers there. And you can also follow me on Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. I've got nothing to plug. I'm actually not going to be anywhere public except if you see me going down the streets of Santa Monica here. What have you got to plug there, Simon?
Well, this is first of all a shout out to Dan Lynch. Got they've got the black hat on. We want you to get well soon, Dan, and come back on here so that you can do some of the presenting and take some of the load here. So get healthy, and we want you back.
Yes, I agree.
So I'm just coming to the end of my 8 years on the OSI board. My last day is March 31st. And I thought I would get bored if I wasn't on the board of some free and open source software organization. So I've been elected to the board of directors of the Document Foundation that creates LibreOffice. So I'm just getting started with that. And that, a whole lot of work with free and open source software clients, writing for InfoWorld. I just haven't got round to booking any conferences. So I don't have anything to plug for the foreseeable future. I wrote a column in InfoWorld this week, and I would really appreciate your support on InfoWorld, saying great things to my editor so that he buys more columns off me. You can follow everything that I'm doing on webmink.com, which is my website, or meshedinsights.com, which is my company's website. You'll find me on Twitter as Webmink. You'll find me on Google Plus as Simon Phipps. And there aren't really any other places that I like being followed, particularly not on Facebook or LinkedIn. So those are the places to go find me. And thank you for having me back on the show again, Randall.
Thank you, Simon.
One of the things on the schedule that's coming up.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Simon. I appreciate you helping there. Oh, and I did just get the proposal this morning. I think it's the call for papers for FISLE down in Porto Alegre, Brazil. And it happens to be like 2 weeks away from the Olympics. So I don't think I'll be staying the week like I usually do in Copacabana because I'm sure everything's all booked up crazy there for the Olympics, either pre or post to that. But I'm pretty sure I'm going to apply again to be one of the guest speakers at FISLE. I also did not get accepted for OSCON. So I will be there.
You're in fine company, Rand. They turned my paper down and I gave a keynote at OSCON Europe. So evidently there is a new broom sweeping through the halls there.
Yes, yes. Well, I think they got something like, you know, five times as many proposals as they have slots. So I don't feel bad. I'll be there anyway at OSCON, even though it's in Austin, Texas this year. I'll be there in my Floss Weekly capability. So I will be there looking for guests and things like that. Except now that we're on Tuesday instead of Wednesday, we might not be doing a live show from there. We might have to can up a show first. And I don't know. We'll figure something out. I'm sure we will. Anyway, that's about it for me. I think it's about time to wrap up the show. So we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.